Hey friends, Peggy Hall back with you from thehealthyamerican.org. I've got a guest on with me today. This is Daniel Craig, and Daniel, along with his wife Megan, are in the throes, he says, of learning what it means to raise a family to the glory of God. They are homeschool grads themselves. We are talking all about homeschooling. They've got a summit that you can check out. And remember, even if you are not a parent, or maybe you're a grandparent, you probably know a parent who is struggling with this choice to get their children out of what I call the public prison schools. So Daniel and I just met, so you're going to get to know him as I'm getting to know him. I love what you've got going on at homeschoolsummits.org. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Peggy. So great to be with you. And man, anytime I get an opportunity to talk about all the good things that have happened in my life through parents who are willing to take the leap, as you just described, pull their kids out of the public prison education system and sacrifice so many things to give me an education that I really feel is superior in so many ways, and that I'm now trying to do the same thing for my kids. Man, I'm happy to talk about that anytime.
Well, that is great. We are going to dive right in, but I want to share right off the bat this homeschool summit, homeschoolsummits.com, because I want people to go here and we'll start talking and chatting a bit. But friends, look at this link here because you can sign up and this is very timely. So there is a free event. Daniel, we're going to kind of do the interview backwards. Tell us all about the free event. Then we're going to go back and talk all about
That's great.
you, your background, what you went through, why it's important to get children out of these indoctrination centers. But let's start with the heart of the matter. You've got this free online event coming up.
Yeah, so you know what? My wife and I, together with some other homeschool graduates back in 2017, said, how can we reach more people all over the world with resources, free content, encouragement, equipping, vision, but also practical encouragement to help them make the leap, dive into homeschooling? And so we started homeschoolsummits.com, and we provide these free online homeschool conferences where we interview, much like you're doing with me today, experts from all over on very specific aspects related to homeschooling. And then we just provide this phenomenal curated content to families. Generally speaking, 20,000 families sign up, over 100 countries. I think we're 9 days out from this one, and we have something like 17,000 families signed up. So we'll probably be 25,000. So, anyways, so many people come back event after event. They say, this was the tipping point for me. This is where I got the clarity I needed. This is where I got the encouragement I needed. And this particular event, the God-Centered Homeschool, we really believe that there's a lot of different reasons that people do choose to homeschool. But at the end of the day, education is a form of discipleship. It's a form of passing on your faith. And we want to help parents raise children who know God, who love God, and who want to serve God, and do that in the homeschooling and educational context. So that's what this is all about. And we hope you can sign up for free over at homeschoolsummits.com/centered and join us along with thousands of other families all over the world for what we think will be a really, really encouraging event.
Well, this is so great, Daniel. I'll have a link for everyone in the description box of this video. I kind of want to look at a larger macro view here. The fact that you're actually doing something, you're not just complaining about the status of our schools and our children. So now that we showed everyone where to go, and friends,
Yes.
I actually was on Daniel's email list. I was getting his emails and I'm thinking, this is incredible information. So I reached out to him and I said, come on the show and just tell everybody what you've got. So let's talk a little bit about your background and
Yes,
how you got
absolutely.
into this. So take it away.
Yeah, so I'm the youngest of five kids, and I had a mom and dad who just loved us so much, and really wanted to do whatever they needed to do to raise us to know and love and serve God. And so our story in terms of homeschooling is probably like a lot of families. My sister started out in public school. The first year in kindergarten went pretty well, and they're like, oh, this is working pretty good. And then year two was a disaster, and they saw their little flower of a daughter starting to close up, and they said, we have to do something else. And right around that time, they heard a radio program. This is back in the 80s, right? So they heard a radio program about homeschooling, and they're like, we don't really know very many people doing this, but I think this is a good thing for our family. And so my parents made the decision, and the rest is history. The rest of us five kids were homeschooled all the way from the beginning through high school. And there was a lot of figuring things out as we went, a lot of curriculum switching, but man, so much togetherness as a family, so much life application, so much phenomenal learning opportunities. I got to go to Russia when I was five. We were missionaries. We worked with Russian orphans. Homeschooling afforded us that flexibility. And I just, e even though my homeschooling experience wasn't perhaps like the most regimented, structured form of education, it was a form of education in which we got to learn the most important things. First of all, get our relationship with God, right? Learn about His Word, but also communication skills, practical life skills, business skills. I got to work in an upholstery shop when I was 12,
I
and
love that.
be different part of different mentorship and apprenticeship opportunities at young ages. And so I'm really thankful for a very life integrated form of education that just left me feeling like I have a really significant legacy that has been given to me, and I want to help the next generation. I want to carry this vision of life integrated, individualized, God-centered learning and education and discipleship into the next generation. So that's why we're doing what we're doing.
I absolutely love those adjectives, life integrated education. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah,
One of
yeah.
your
So
taglines? I mean, this is so powerful.
I'll continue the story a little bit.
Yeah.
So when we were finishing kind of my high school years, we started looking at higher education. I see you have a background in higher education as well. And so the question was, well, what are the Craigs going to do for, college? And of course, everybody just, naturally assumes that you're gonna go to college. And then people would look at us like, wait a minute, you're not gonna try to homeschool your way through college, are you? And with this look of terror and dread. And we'd be like, is that possible? How do you do that, right? And so the thinking for us about higher education was, well, what are the things that led homeschooling to be such a great form of education for us, K through 12? Well, you look at it, it's one-on-one relationships, right? It's a teacher-student ratio of 5 to 1 in this case, right? Hard to
Right.
beat that.
And
Life into
teachers who know you the best.
exactly, and actually care about you, right? And
That's
I'm not
right.
saying that teachers in public schools never care about their students, but the numbers just don't bear out the same kind of one-on-one life, one-on-one relationships. Life integration. So much of education is an island. And you think about the way that we typically learn, we have these sort of very sterile classes that are pretty well divorced from what you actually goes on in the world, real world. And we just don't learn skills that way, right? If you want to learn how to ride a bike, you don't, go through, bike accident recovery workshop, bike dynamics, bike 101, bike 102. No, you get on the bike, right? And so that's what we had the opportunity to do in homeschooling. And so when we started thinking about higher education, same questions came to our minds. And when I went to college, I just realized that there were good professors and good teachers, but there was something that was missing. And a lot of it just had to do with that one-on-one instruction element and also the ability to take what we were learning and apply it in real life. And so that's become a real passion of mine, is this whole idea of mentorship in
Love it.
education. And we could keep talking about that, but really the idea behind mentorship is you have learning from a one-on-one expert who knows what you need to know for your particular career or path of work, and then in a very tailored way they can say, all right, this is what you need to learn, and then they can give you real-time feedback as you go and apply that in real life. And I had that opportunity in business. And I was able to kind of contrast that business mentorship experience with my college experience, and there was just no comparison. And so that's part of like the practical ramifications here of stepping outside the box and into real life and integrating education into real life. You actually get a much better education.
Well, you talked about working in a an upholstery shop at the age of 12, which I just think is fantastic. I have a little side business of healthy, natural beauty products and so forth. And I had an eight-year-old helping me package the soaps. And he didn't want to go play with his friends during the summer. In fact, he brought his friend over to work in my garage with him.
I love it.
That struck me because they felt valued. They were learning. They were productive. They were engaged. And they had a sense of accomplishment and contribution. Yes. And that really impacted me. So even though I was in higher ed, I was always struggling with that, the structure and of the institution of public learning. There are plenty of marvelous teachers. I would like to think that I was one of them. I love teaching, but we're hampered by the number of students, the regimented setup of all of that. And I think in these last few years, a lot of parents, now that their children were home and the parents were looking on Zoom, and they were aghast at what the curriculum was. We'll talk in a moment about the God-centered curriculum.
Yeah.
And as a person of faith, I mean, I really admire your enthusiasm, your exhortation, and your making that a centerpiece of your curriculum. But friends who are not of that persuasion, keep an open mind, because the whole concept of learning in a superior modalities that are not in these indoctrination centers, you can really glean something from this. So I want to go back a little bit to you being homeschooled, one of five. What was the spread of ages? Were you guys close in age, or was
it's a pretty significant spread. My sister is 13 years older than me. So yeah,
okay.
A 13 year spread.
And then did you do any of the activities with your siblings, or were they all separate individual, or?
Like, yeah, it was a mix. You know, I was 4 years younger than the one right above me. So, but we did, Dave and I did do some learning together for sure. It was a mix. You know, certain things like math and science, maybe a little bit more separate just because of the learning sequence in those more technical subjects. But reading, geography, other things like that, certainly enjoyed some, you know, in my case, there was a little bit of a set of three and a set of two. So Dave and I were the ones paired together.
So did you ever feel like you were excluded from greater society? Did you feel like you were at a disadvantage for being socialized with other children?
Yeah, I'm Peggy. I have to just thank you right now for giving me the socialization question. Because obviously
crazy,
this is
isn't
the
it?
Number one question
That's right.
That comes out. And first of all, let me just say, yeah, that is why we homeschool, is
exactly.
Because we do care about socialization and we care about limiting socialization and directing it in the right ways. Now, let me just say a couple of things on this. The Bible says that he who walks with wise men will be wise, but a companion of fools will suffer harm. So there's my socialization philosophy right there. Now, when it comes to interacting with the real world, who in the world thinks that public education is the real world?
Exactly.
I don't even know anybody that actually believes that. And so what I'm really thankful for was, yes, are there some homeschoolers out there that perhaps have been overly isolated? Yeah, but that's not, that can happen in some ways with any family, right?
Can happen in the public schools. They are
absolutely
bullied. If
absolutely.
They're different, if they don't wear the right clothing or have the right haircut, the amount of anxiety and pressure that I can speak for myself. Remember when I was a young child, and not that young, but like teen years and so forth, and feeling like, do I fit in? That anxiety impedes learning.
Yes. So that, you know, isolation, inappropriate isolation, can happen in any environment. I had a mom and dad who were really big into us being prepared to make an impact on the world. And so being shy wasn't an option in our family. And we were constantly interacting with, you know, people in our church circles, in my dad's work circles. We would do these musical plays at Christmas time, at nursing homes. And then when we went to Russia, we had these kids from the Russian foster system, essentially living with us. We lived, you know, in an orphanage with 300 people. So no, socialization wasn't a problem for us in the sense of like actually interacting with other human beings. But here's the key thing. My belief is, and my experience is, that your children should spend most time with the people that can have the most positive influence on them, right? And so that's why I'm thankful for, yes, a certain amount of protection in the kind of socialization and socializing environments that my parents chose for us, but then a lot of opportunity to receive some great inputs from other people that came in a cross-generational environment. And that's probably one of the big things that's really negative about the public school form of socialization is it's peer-based. And I think we all know that's not the healthiest for young people.
Yeah, that's so important. Now, another question that comes up is about playing sports. And did you have opportunities for that? Is that something you enjoyed? How did that work?
Yeah, it is. It's something I enjoy a lot. I was one of four boys, so we had our own two-on-two volleyball tournaments. Played tons of ping pong with my brothers, but beyond that, just as our story, when we went to Russia, we were living in this orphanage complex, and there was a asphalt field patio, or they actually have soccer fields made of asphalt over there, but we would flood it in the wintertime, and we would play hockey every day for like an hour or two with all of our friends from the orphanage. And then we would go down and play the Russians down at their ice rinks. And so I never played part of any real formal sports environments, but lots of opportunities. And in terms of homeschoolers in general, like there's quite a bit of flexibility to be able to even be involved in public school sports if you want to do that. We never did that, and had a lot of great op other opportunities, but that's really not a limitation.
When I was in the school age years, I was on a community swim team. So all of my best friends, I didn't even go to school with. They were from other schools and all different ages. So I had that experience. And then I was also taking gymnastics lessons through the city. There were classes there. And so I met friends from all different places. So it's important that parents think outside the box when it comes to these concepts of, well, what about sports and what about socialization? I mean, you do it normally anyway. And why not get your children's friends out of those public schools as well? And we'll talk a little bit about that. There's another obstacle that people say, Daniel, I'm sure you've heard it all the time. And that it's a funny one for me as well. What if my child falls behind? What do you have to say about that?
Falls behind what?
Exactly.
And you know what? I want to just say, as a dad of four kids, I can relate to this concern, right? We want to do right by our children. And to be honest, we all have this innate and tendency to sort of compare our kids and their performance to other people. And so we want the best for our kids. And so I understand this concern. But the problem with that question is it assumes that there's a universal standard. And of course, the government would like to tell you that they define the universal standard. But what is the standard? And what are all the various forms of intelligences that are out there? Does the government get to define which ones should be measured and which ones shouldn't? Oftentimes we think of falling behind with regard to academics, but what about arts? What about music? What about physical development? What about economic development? What about business development? See, like there's all of these different ways that young people can be developed. We should not let the government define what the standard is. And really, for me, the standard is what does being prepared to live a fruitful life that's honoring to God require? And that's going to be different for different kids based on their individual giftings and abilities. So guys, let's just chuck the standard out the window. Besides, in my view, the one standard that matters, and that's, God's word, around what does it look like to be a godly, well-prepared young man or young woman to be fruitful in society.
I love that. It's so powerful, and you're just so encouraging. And the truth is that children are going to hop, skip, and soar if we are looking at their peers because the shackles are off. There's no more of these structured, regimented periods and the competition between each child and the having all of that pressure to perform for a standardized test. We'll talk a
Right.
little bit about curriculum in a moment, but the next question I have, another concern that comes up a lot is, and you talked about it, touched on it a little bit, how are homeschooled individuals viewed when they do go for their college applications?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And I actually worked for about 5 years in higher education, serving homeschoolers and helping them get into institutions of higher education. I mean, especially post-COVID, like homeschooling is not a fringe form of
That's
education
right.
anymore. Add to that the fact that the data is clear that homeschoolers generally outperform their public school counterparts academically. There just really isn't a significant limitation. And add to that the fact that many more prestigious schools are going to be defining admittance based off of performance on standardized tests like the SAT or ACT or MCAT or whatever it is for grad school. We just do not find any kind of significant difficulty for homeschoolers. In fact, in many cases, many institutions realize that their best students are homeschoolers.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask the question,
Yes.
what is the purpose of college? And the reality is that college, by tradition, has become a default for Americans, regardless of their career. And frankly, the idea is if you want to figure out what to do with the rest of your life, well, you should go to college. And maybe you'll figure out in college, what you're really good at and what career you should pursue. But the data shows that the average college student, 80% of them do something different than the area of their major after they change their degree two, three, four times. And so the problem is that college is frankly just a bad place to figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And that's again because it's not integrated with real life. I'm not saying there's no benefit to college, but it's better to pursue mentorship or apprenticeship opportunities
Yes.
that get you exposure in the market so that you can actually get a sense of what your giftings are. And then if you need to spend $100,000 or $200,000 on an education that requires going into that field, that's required by that field, then great. But that's just not necessarily across the board. And it's much better to figure out what am I headed towards, then choose your education, then just pursue college as a default and end up with tons of debt that can, in many cases, shackle students for decades of their lives. So there's my little pitch on higher education.
Well, I agree with you completely on that, Daniel. I really question, and I encourage parents and their young adult children to question that as well, because not only are they enslaving themselves with these student loans, but they're also out of, generally speaking, those economic opportunities. They're 4 years behind their peers that have gone into either an apprenticeship, a mentorship, a trade, starting their own business. There are, 8-year-olds that are starting websites and, making soap and selling it. I highly encourage that. And I know it's not for everyone. There are those that want to go through a traditional trajectory, maybe becoming a CPA or something where I suppose college is required. But you know what I like about this trend, and we're going to talk a little bit about the trends in a moment, but it's almost as if we are going back to the good old days where the college degrees were not necessary. They were very rare, and you did learn as an apprentice. Even doctors, they apprenticed with other doctors and they learned at the elbow of these experts of the learned ones. And so I love that we're kind of coming back around to that. I've spoken a lot on this channel about is college worth it, having alternative ways of learning. And a quick story before we go continue with some of your wonderful and encouraging positive insights. I was counseling a client who was being discriminated against because he didn't want to become, as I call it, a human pincushion in order to continue his studies. He was in his junior year of doing an art history major in New York. And the school was pushing back illegally, I might add. And I've really helped a lot of people stand up for their religious beliefs and actually educate others about their right to observe and practice and honor God with their bodies without having these things inflicted upon them. I have to be careful on this channel how I say things. YouTube doesn't always like to hear this message. But when we had this conversation, it was the mother and the adult son. And he said, you know, Mom, I'm thinking I could just start working at an art gallery now because that's what I want to do when I finish. Right. And I don't feel like staying in college is actually going to help me more than if I start working in an art gallery. And right. I was so encouraged by that young adult's decision and conclusion that he drew on his own, considering what was going on, the amount of time, the money, the hostile environment. And he thought, I could actually be learning on the job. So these are the kinds of things. He didn't need a degree per se to do art history and work in a gallery. So these are really great messages. And I'm so happy to hear you speak about that. I have another objection before we talk about the movement that is gaining and growing in this country that is so encouraging.
I haven't had this much fun in a long time.
I know. This is just, we might have to have a second and a third. We'll definitely have you back on. There's so much to talk about. But here's another objection that I get all the time. Mm-hmm. And this is from parents who say, but I'm not a teacher and I don't know what to do. So you've got curriculum ideas, support. How do you answer those objections?
Well, it's interesting that what they're saying is, I am not qualified enough by the educational system that I came from to teach someone else. So I'm going to send them back to the same education system.
Brilliant.
Does that make sense?
It's perfectly stated.
The purpose of learning in such large measure is to be able to pass on knowledge. If you can't pass on knowledge as a result of the education system that you are part of, isn't that a problem? And so that's kind of step number one. Step number two is there's, again, a standard of what a teacher should do that I think is really unhelpful, because what I think about education is, first of all, and this is where my faith plays in really heavily, so I'm going to tie that in, is that God gave children to parents. He didn't give children primarily to teachers. And in a biblical construct, those parents are responsible and have the privilege of investing in their children's lives in all aspects, and to carve out one aspect and say, well, I can teach them about finances, I can teach them about, you know, relationships, but I can't teach them about math. Who says? Like, yeah, you can. And the good news is, you don't have to necessarily teach them in a way that fits a certain bar or a certain construct that maybe is what you feel unqualified to do. Take a more informal approach. And there's lots of curriculum out there that can help you with that. And we can talk about the curriculum in just a moment. But the reality is that education is a way of looking at the world, and what parent doesn't want to be involved at a deep level in shaping that worldview perspective of their children? And in my opinion, parents are the best equipped to do that because they know their children, they know their gifts, they know their strengths and weaknesses. And by virtue of that God-ordained parent-child relationship that God designed, I think parents are uniquely and innately equipped to teach their children on a wide variety of subjects. Now, does that mean that they can teach them everything about chemistry and, you know, high school biology? No, that's not what I'm saying. But in general, there is so much in education that can be learned together, that can be taught by parents, that people look at the exceptional sort of really, you know, dense subjects and disqualify themselves much more broadly, and that's not necessary.
There are so many ways that this can occur. So, you know, student-centered learning, you learn together with your child.
Yeah.
You can have a tutor. You can connect with other parents in learning groups or pods or community types of schools.
Yes.
The broader point that I like to make when I hear these objections is there's always another way. It doesn't have to look like you are home from 8 to 2. You're not mimicking a public
Right.
school setting. And if a parent is working all day, or a single parent, sadly, perhaps a divorced parent, and even the one parent insists that the child is in public school, I always recommend that even it's even more important that the other parent or grandparents, that they create times for individual learning, discovery, exploration along a homeschool type of curriculum or setting to counteract everything that's gone on. I had a case like that where the parents were divorced, and I guess the judge or someone had the decision that they were going to stay in public school, and the one parent was just so dismayed. So I said, well, you can still do the homeschooling in the evenings and on the weekends and on the days that you have your child. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. So there is always another way of integrating this. And there are definite situations that I am, compassionate about, where there are other ways of filling the gap. There are plenty of places I know in California where they have homeschool supplementary gatherings where you can drop your child off on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And that's when they teach the science and the math, because those are kind of the more difficult, academic subjects. We're just summing up that there's always another way, friends, that these objections, I think, sometimes come from a sense of inadequacy. And you are good enough, and you are equipped. And as Daniel said so encouragingly and convincingly, God created this parent-child relationship. You are the best one to be there for them. Learn together. Have your child teach you. Bring in others. There are plenty of learning opportunities to fill the gap if you're feeling maybe not up to par in certain areas. Well, you know what, Daniel, what I want to talk about, we're going to wrap up in a little bit. We want to talk about the specifics, the nuts and bolts of curriculum. So we've got parents that are like, you know what, Peggy, okay, Daniel, you got me going. I'm going to do this. Or maybe I'm a grandparent and I have the grandkids on the weekends and I want to pitch in and I want to do this. Where do I begin? And that's where you come in. You've got
So we do the homeschool summits as a way of providing equipping to a broad variety of families all over the world. But then we want to come back and say, all right, well, you do need tools, you do need resources. And so that's where Generations offers a K through 12 homeschool curriculum. And if you want to just click on the curriculum button up there at the top, that will
Oh,
you can just
great.
you can just click on kindergarten, for example.
Okay.
There is a few things that I would just like to say here on curriculum. First of all, when it comes to education and discipleship being really tied to this concept of education, we believe that the problem with public schools is not simply the fact that they're, teaching, woke ideologies, or that they're teaching, transgenderism to our, 7-year-olds, or that they're transgendering the bathrooms. We believe that the problem is much more fundamental than that, and those things are just symptoms. And the fundamental problem is that the public schools kicked God out of education. And the problem with that is that if you kick God out of education, in my view, you kick meaning out of learning. And you begin to look at science as sort of this random, chaotic thing that just happened, and you lose a sense of wonder and awe at the beauty that God made, because, oh, wait a minute. No, this none of this was created and in an entirely secular and materialistic universe, really, there is no meaning. So kids begin to go through science or math or even history with this sense that there is no meaning in life, there is no purpose. And that, to me, is the fundamental issue. And so we want to go the opposite direction and build a curriculum, not that just doesn't have those, ideologies in them, but that really goes back to the foundation of knowledge. I believe, as the Bible says, that knowing God and fearing God is the beginning of knowledge, because we have to see, wow, this is the world God made, and He made it beautiful. He made it for us to steward. I have a place in this world. I have a purpose. God made me, and he made me a boy or a girl, and that has unique meaning. And so now, as I study human biology, I'm understanding something of God's character in how he made the human body. Or as I study the world around me, as I'm studying history, I'm seeing a meaningful trajectory of events with a true purpose that I believe is tied to God's purpose for the world, which is to save the world through Jesus Christ. So all that to say, we want to have a curriculum that's thoroughly infused with meaning and significance for children in science, in math, in history, in language arts. And so that is why we are taking a very God-centered approach to the curriculum, because we want to go as far away from what the public schools are saying, what Joe Biden is saying, do the exact opposite. And if you want to just click on just the header there, Christian homeschool curriculum, and it'll remove the grade filter, and give families a really beautiful and engaging and meaningful approach to learning. That's what our passion is in a nutshell.
This is so encouraging, Daniel. I know that you are having a huge impact. And friends, you see, there really are no objections that can't be addressed. They certainly are met with empathy and understanding, and then a solution. And here are some amazing solutions. I love all the categories that you have. Just looking at this is, wonderful family and relationships, the economics, God made life. So this is pro-life, pro-family, pro-faith, pro-freedom. This is really how it needs to be. We're going to wrap up in a couple of minutes, Daniel. I definitely have to have you back. A reminder, everyone, to sign up for the free summit. Even if you don't have children, this is an opportunity for you to learn from these other experts who are going to. Can you give us just maybe a couple of topics that you think would be the most compelling for people to.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to start out again, it's the God-centered homeschool. So first of all, you can't give what you don't have. So, what does it mean to be a God-centered parent? What does it mean to live a life that is connected to God? What does it mean then to be a God-centered teacher? All right. How do I teach my kids in a way that has the Christian faith infused in it? And so that children, don't walk away from their faith. What does it mean to have God-centered curriculum to teach science and math and history, as we were just discussing, from a truly meaning-filled perspective rooted in God? And then the last day, if you keep on scrolling down, you can kind of see these categories, is the
Okay.
God-centered calling. And this is
Got it.
huge.
God-centered.
This is
Okay,
huge
perfect.
because, Peggy, I think you and I both know that my generation, and subsequent generations are struggling with a sense of meaning and purpose in life. This is why we see suicide rates increasing. And people need to know that there is a purpose, that their lives do have meaning. And we want to help parents equip, we want to help equip parents to pass on that vision of a significant life, live for the glory of God to their children. Because this isn't just about school for school's sake. No, it's school for life. We're preparing to be, as I mentioned, people who know, love, serve God, serve others, love their neighbor as themselves, and make positive contributions to the world.
Well, that is life-changing. And that, as you said at the beginning of the program, God's been taken out of the educational setting. And then we're brought up to think that we are just a random collection of cells that happen, no meaning, a speck in the universe. And that is so harmful. And you're on a mission to change that. Are you seeing that more and more parents? I know in California, I think the numbers are roughly a million. Fewer students have returned to the public schools since the, I call it cooties, was inflicted. And then prior to that, with all of the removal of waivers and exemptions for these other medical requirements in California, and that's happening in other states, but there is a wave of backlash. So what are you seeing, Daniel? You're seeing more and more parents coming to this.
Certainly huge influx in homeschooling. And in terms of specific numbers, I don't have those handy off the top of my head at the moment, but what we're seeing is that I would say there's just a general skepticism about the institution, and that I view as a very positive thing. What I want to encourage families though too is it's not just about running away from something, it's about going to something. And that's the very positive message that we're trying to provide to families all over the world, really. And that is, education was God's idea. We don't have to go and figure this out from scratch. It's no wonder that, as you mentioned earlier in the program, that one-on-one mentorship works. That's what Jesus did with the 12 disciples, okay? So there is a pattern. We believe that pattern is given to us in scripture. And the beautiful thing here is that we can, and we are seeing children being transformed, their lives being transformed as a result of parents making these sacrifices, and maybe setting aside some of the priorities of our society, the American dream, and investing in what matters more than cars, than the size of your house. That's the next generation, eternal souls that live forever. Parents, you have incredible influence on the lives of your children. Don't miss that opportunity. And by God's grace, as you lean into that opportunity, you'll see wonderful things happen in your kids' lives, as you make those investments.
Well, Daniel, God has gifted you with exhortation, teaching, preaching, encouragement, and it's just contagious. This has been such a wonderful interview. I definitely want to have you back again.
Love
And
to.
I know that everyone who's watching is seeing you in this light of encouragement. You're a young father. Seeing and knowing what you're doing gives me hope in our future. Just on a, very basic level, like knowing that people like you are out there, it's just wonderful because we are so often faced with all of the, trials and tribulations, which we knew and know that we are faced with. But we also are called to exhort, uplift, focus on the positive and encourage each other. And that's exactly what you're doing. I really appreciate your time, especially on short notice. Friends, this summit is coming up. Sign up for it. Please share this video and share the links with parents, grandparents, neighbors, just people that you know, because this is the wave. This is how we get right with God, with our country. We have children that are not indoctrinated into the government ways, who are able to stand by their convictions and, as you say, make those positive changes. So thank you so much, Daniel.
Thank you,
I
Peggy, for having me
will
on. I
look
appreciate
forward
it.
to next time. And stick with me for a moment, friends. You know where to find me. It's at peggyhall.substack.com. I will have a Substack coming out with links and a little summary of what we talked about here with some of those objections so that you'll have that in a written form and you can share that with others. So I'll look forward to seeing everybody in an upcoming broadcast.